everything you love about Monday, a trip to Bantertown. John and Johnny talk
about that.
Oh, you
haven't taken us to Bantertown in a long time.
It's been a long time. If you're a new listener.
That's like, yeah, you're completely flummoxed by that term.
Yeah, and by flummoxed. That's a great word.
Think?
Yeah.
You're the writer.
Am I?
Yeah.
Johnny, you're a writer, too.
I do. I write things.
You know, you should go back in time, listener, and listen to some old school. We used to talk about Bantertown, which was, we thought about starting a podcast network called Bantertown.
So we have one podcast, and you think we should have a whole network.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
think we have enough.
It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. I wonder who out there would want their podcast on our network.
Huh.
That's an interesting thought. We only think about getting our podcast on someone else's network.
Yeah, what happened to reach down and, like, when you get to the top on the elevator, you send it back down for the next person, John. What happened to that?
Well, we haven't got anywhere near the top.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we're still on ground floor. Actually, Johnny, we had more downloads by, like, it was our record month in June. And not just because there's five Mondays. I'm not counting that fifth Monday. Like, just in general, out of four episodes,
yeah,
we had the most downloads by far, so... That's good. Let's do it again in July. I mean,
we got nothing else to do. I'm not going anywhere.
I would be curious how many people are sharing with friends and then are talking about the podcast.
I think we have a lot of people who this is their guilty pleasure and they're like, they don't want anyone to know about it.
You think so? Keep it secret.
Yeah, it's like we're Real Housewives of whatever.
If we are someone's Real Housewives, like they're far removed from mainstream culture.
Yeah. I don't know.
Two ugly white dudes.
Do you have guilty pleasure, like, show that you watch that's like, you're like, oh, this is, why do I watch this show? John, bring it out.
I mean, The Office is my...
That's not a guilty pleasure, though. I'll say guilty pleasure is like a show with, like, vapid characters that's like trash TV that you watch. Then you're like, why do I watch this show? Not like it's sin,
no,
but it's like...
No, but Laura has over the years...
Oh, so you're willing to throw her right under the bus.
Absolutely.
I don't have any guilty pleasure. Laura is just rife with them, though.
I don't get, like, stupid reality television. I'm calling it that. Understand?
I think you watch a lot of dumb things, but you don't feel guilty about it.
I watch dumb things that
you're like, why would I feel guilty?
I watch dumb things that are dumb on purpose.
Yeah.
When someone's being dumb on accident and we all enjoy it, that really bothers me.
Really?
Yeah. Like, dumb on accident for our amusement.
I like dumb on accident with arrogance.
Yes. That bothers me, though.
That's when somebody's like, I think what you mean is, and they're terribly wrong. Mm. That's funny to me.
It is very funny, but then when we give that person like 10 seasons and act like that they now speak into culture.
Oh, you're talking about reality television.
Yeah, like.
Yeah. I'm talking about like a show that's scripted that way.
When you were dumb and we elevated you for it, at first we laughed at you, then we laughed with you, and now you're laughing at us because you're making billions.
Man, that will preach.
Wow, come on, guys.
First you laugh at sin, then.
Come on, guys.
Sin, what is it?
Laughs at you.
Wait, no, wait, sin no, wait. In the end laughs
first
at you.
First you laugh with sin. Mm-hmm. No, at sin.
At sin, then you laugh with sin.
And then sin laughs at you. Wait.
All the way to the bank. The sin bank.
The sin bank.
Member FDIC.
No, I don't know. I'm trying to think. What would be my guilty pleasure?
I don't know. You know what I was thinking? We were talking about this at lunch, but like I'm having we're so divided. Like on everything, like all you got to do is tweet out, I like avocados, and you will get 42 reply tweets that tell you that you're an idiot and the avocado is the worst thing.
Right.
Just for having an opinion about something as benign as avocados.
Yeah.
And that if it's for that reason, I'm having a hard time with end times theology because we're supposed to get behind, like all the people in the world get behind the Antichrist, right? He snows everybody. But I can't foresee a world that someone is going to skate by and not have a Twitter troll or not have a... Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, who do you think is the closest thing to a universally beloved person right now in the world? I'm thinking Tom Hanks. You don't hear anybody say bad things about Tom Hanks.
I think the conservatives would take down Tom Hanks in a heartbeat.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No, I know everybody loves Tom Hanks.
I don't know.
Everybody on every of but every you have stripe.
But you have a lot of far right who feel like anybody in Hollywood.
he's been Hollywoodized. But yeah, but he makes family-friendly movies that they can watch with their kids.
He makes
kids.
War movies, too.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's a new one coming out on Apple Plus, I think.
That's a Tom Hanks war movie?
Yeah.
He's at war?
He wrote it.
Oh, okay. But he's like too old to be in it.
No, he's in it.
Oh, wow. Because he's pretty old.
I just saw it.
To still be fighting in wars.
I just saw it. I got a free Apple Plus subscription for a year.
Don't forget to cancel it. That's how they get you, John.
Here it is.
These Apple Plus people.
Yeah. It's and I haven't watched anything Apple Plus yet, but it's called...
I watched one show on Apple Plus. I can't remember. It was called Servant. And it's creepy, dude.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's creepy.
Well, I can't... Oh, you'll... it's called Greyhound. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a World War II.
About a bus?
No. I don't know why it's called Greyhound, but it looks like a naval battle. So, see? Can you see that?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks. Looks Greyhound.
Like, looks like he's one of the...
This sounds like something you're making up.
No, you can see him. He's got.
I know, but you've got Photoshop.
That's true. I Photoshopped this right before we went on the air.
Anyway, to me, my choice would be Tom Hanks. Back in the day, it would have been Oprah, probably. But then she kind of has fallen out of favor with some people, I guess, or whatever.
Billy Graham. Around, people used to really like Billy Graham.
That's true.
On both sides. There's a lot of respect for him regardless.
Yeah, even if you didn't believe in Christianity, you'd be like, is that Billy Graham solid?
I wonder if like, staunch Democrats hated Ronald Reagan during his administration. You kind of feel like he...
Well, he was, you had Reagan Democrats. You had a lot of people who considered themselves, they flipped. Which really hasn't really happened since, right?
No.
You didn't see that happen. People are so entrenched now, they vote along party lines. But Reagan made people flip. I mean, didn't he win like 48 states out of 50 against Mondale?
Yeah, it was still one of the best debate moments of all time. Is they were coming after him about his age.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he just... I've watched the documentaries on it because he was so masterful. And he basically... He just said, you know... I agree with this whole age issue, but I do not think that we should hold my opponent accountable for how
young he is. For his inexperience,
his inexperienced youth. The whole room erupted, including Mondale.
Yeah.
That was the crazy part.
Oh, yeah. When he gets you laughing at a joke that is at your expense, and it was your talking point, is that Reagan's too old? Ugh.
It's almost
over.
Let's just
have the election now. It's over.
Guys, give it to him. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Like, and Reagan picks up a glass of water and takes a drink afterwards, and the commentator's like, game, set, match. Like, he knew. He's like, see ya. I just became president.
Yeah, that's like in a set, like in a comedy set, when you have a joke that is your get water joke. I'm famous for not drinking a lot in my set. Not famous for, but if you're in the comedy, if you're a friend of mine in comedy, you know that, like, I don't like stopping the bus at all to look at the road. Like, I'm just like, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
So I'm even afraid to drink water on stage sometimes because I hate, like, stopping. Because I always have this, like, tick that they're, like, being like, get off the stage the minute I stop talking. But if I do take a drink of water, it's always after a huge line like that where you know 100 times out of 100, it gets a big laugh and it gives you enough time to get to the water. And that's what Reagan did. He was just like... When I drop this bomb, I'm going to have a sip.
Surely he thought of it beforehand, obviously. Surely he was ready for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you knew it was going to come up.
Right.
But the guy, he just destroyed him. But I do wonder if Reagan, if he was, beloved. Of course, like we said last week, we have that.
Well, by the end of his second term, he had the Iran-Contra, and he had his own scandals. And he was starting to lose his memory, or he was... choosing to not remember. He was misremembering things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the Iran-Contra hearings, didn't he answer to like, it was like 30% of the questions he answered, I can't recall or whatever. And it was a way of kind of, it's almost like pleading the fifth.
Yeah, you don't have to incriminate yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think of who else. I mean, again, it's going to be hard. Hollywood or politics, either one is going to be very polarizing.
Well, that's the old saying, right? You either die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain. Isn't that from Dark Knight?
Wow,
the Dark Knight.
I thought you were going to quote Shakespeare.
It was about, well, it might have been, but I'm saying, like, I know it was a line in The Dark Knight, right? Because it was about Two-Face. Because he was the beloved mayor or whatever, and then he ended up being the villain.
Isn't there a Two-Face inside of all of us, Johnny?
100%.
You flip a coin.
Well, 50%.
That's great.
Part of me agrees with you.
Dark Knight is a surprisingly layered
yeah.
movie, like surprisingly well layered. I mean, it, you know, for a superhero mm-hmm. type fantasy, it really delves into a lot of things.
I only have one hang up about it, and that is that I noticed when I watched it for the second time that Batman uses the Batman voice even when he's around people who know he's Batman. Like he doesn't.
But isn't the whole idea that he actually becomes Batman?
I don't buy that.
Like that he actually has. Isn't that part of the tension?
Where is he?
There's Bruce Wayne and then there's Batman. And
you're like, look, I know who you are, Bruce.
He fights against
himself. Stop saying, where is he? You startled me.
I did hate this particular actor's Batman voice. Hated it.
You hated Bales? Christian Bale?
Yes.
You had his Batman voice.
Yes. It just is too...
Well, he's really the only one that's done that.
Like, it's just so... it's just so much. Like, I don't know.
It had a little Springsteen in it. It's too gravelly.
Yeah. You just go... What you want is from superheroes...
What if it was just like, hey, y'all. It's just he... why couldn't it be another... Why does it have to be a tougher voice?
No kidding.
You could throw somebody off the scent just by being
Absolutely.
Like... I think we're going to go get the Joker, y'all. Be like, well... I know it's not Bruce Wayne because I've heard him. That's not. Put that to rest.
Oh, man. That's...
Riddler's out there, y'all.
That's good. That would, you're right. That would surprise everybody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Maybe we should make our own superhero that we turn all of the rules on their head. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's a very demure Southern man.
Yeah.
When he's in character.
That's kind of what
Superman. He's got like overalls.
That's what Superman kind of did.
Yeah.
But you know, you have to have that suspension of disbelief that you somehow could know that Clark Kent, though he looks exactly mm-hmm. like Superman with right. glasses.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
Right.
Like that, you know, he didn't wear a mask.
Were the glasses prescription? Because, I mean, wouldn't that mess up your eyes if you're just wearing that for a disguise? Maybe they were just clear glass.
And he had laser vision, and you're worried about his eyes?
Well, yeah.
Like
he could do LASIK.
On himself.
Somehow.
He looked in a mirror and gave
himself LASIK. No more glasses. That's an episode we didn't see. That's a part of the comics that we didn't, that universe.
But how the most famous superhero, we could all just buy that. Like,
well, nobody, I mean, there have been people saying that for years. Oh, how can Lois fall for this? But yeah, I don't know. I look different with glasses on for sure. I have glasses, but I hardly ever wear them. You probably even forgot that I wear glasses because I never wear them.
I mean, I don't say I forgot. I'm supposed to wear them. Something I think about a lot.
I'm supposed to wear them to drive but I can't keep them in the car because it can damage the glasses, evidently.
Why?
The heat can damage the lenses.
Really?
So you're not supposed to keep prescription glasses in your car. And so because of that, I just don't wear them.
Johnny, there has to be another way. Like put them in
like
your...
Like a cooler?
Backpack.
I need to put them in a... Yeah, but that's still...
Just carry your backpack.
It's still hot
that's
in the backpack.
That's how I live with...
But I don't carry my backpack everywhere.
You don't take your backpack inside when you park?
I wonder if I put them in like the little console thing, if that would be enough shade and protection from the heat. I need like a cooler.
I feel like you haven't thought this out for a guy who's been wearing glasses for like 2 years now.
Well... If you add it all up, I've probably worn glasses for like a week. So 2 years is a stretch.
Again, I haven't given in to it. My eyes are still pretty strong.
You've not given in, so you're starting to lose your vision.
No. What I've noticed is as long
as... Do you know that I'm in here right now? Be honest.
Who goes there? Speaking of, by the way, it's Brutus's 15th birthday today.
We talked about him being blind last episode.
Yeah.
Blinding.
Wait, I got a notification.
He's going blind. He's not blinding. That would be...
He's so bright, you can't look at him. No, I went to the eye doctor, and I was just like, hey, you know, occasionally when I really stare at a screen all day, and they're like, well, we could give you these glasses,
right.
and that would help that, mm-hmm. but then you're going to need them.
Right.
So you might just stare at the screen less. I was like, okay, so that's what I do. She can't read my phone now. Like, we were driving to Arkansas this weekend uh-huh. for a family thing.
So close-up stuff gets blurry to
her. She's looking at her phone, which is an 11, and she's reading it just fine with no glasses.
Hmm.
And then I was like, hey, could you read this text to me? I think a text just came in. Hand it to her, and she's like, hold on. She starts rummaging through her Maraca purse to get out glasses.
Has she got the zoomed-in text on hers?
She's apparently made bigger text on her bigger phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was like, you were just reading a phone. I just can't, you know.
It's like, remember when your mom got the giant print Bible?
Yes.
Remember those when they came out?
Oh, yeah.
Gigantic. It was an even heavier Bible
yeah.
somehow because it just needed more room on the page. Mm. And that just like our lives. But yeah, it's like that. You can do that with your phones now. But I can't do the big. This is the biggest. I can't do any bigger. The Plus phones, get out of here with that.
Well, but the new 11s are like between
are
iPhone
they?
Now and Plus size.
Wait, there's an 11? Yeah, I'm thinking 12 because 12 is coming out soon.
Oh dear.
It's this.
Can I just?
I have a 7, and it's really slow because they're ratcheting them down, right?
Yeah,
they do that.
My 7 officially, like the earpiece.
I mean, we
work.
Say this. We're going to be on Apple Podcasts saying negative things about Apple, but we know, right? They throttle your phones down.
Yeah, I think of all the people right now that
Apple
everyone
doesn't
in society
care.
Is they're upset not, about. We should not, target Apple.
They're not threatened by us.
I think we could all get behind that. Let's I love Apple.
What do you want to target
them? Let's target Apple right now in the discourse, because that would throw all these other things off a little bit for a while and give us some relief. Let's just go after the tech company we all pay billions of dollars to. That keeps,
but, I mean, they're not even the biggest. Like, Microsoft would be way more, you know.
But that would be very disingenuous, Johnny, because you and I don't use Microsoft products besides software.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But it's a Microsoft world, John.
Mm. Perhaps, is it? I don't know.
Apple's like 11 or 12% of the computer market.
But it's 100% of my computer market.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
And so you're thinking more about yourself.
And it has been for a long time. And we all know that anecdotal evidence is king today.
Yeah, it's true.
So I will say my computer that we're recording this podcast on is a 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maybe 11. I can go right here to this nifty little Apple. I can tell you. Hold on. About this Mac, it is late 2011.
Okay.
Johnny, in 2011.
That's almost 9 years.
Yeah, my daughter in 2011 was 3 years old. I've been working on this computer, and I replaced it with a solid-state terabyte drive, yeah. And it works like a peach except for – it does. It just works great.
What have you done with Sadie's drive since then? Have you – any upgrades to her?
She's still running
– the metaphor runs thin.
She's second generation.
That's so interesting.
Yeah,
because okay.
She's my daughter. But, yeah. Yeah, no, it's I still like it though. When I upgrade this version of GarageBand, we obsolete that we record this in. Even if you don't like what we say, we do get really good reviews about our sound quality.
I hated everything you said, but it was so clear.
Yeah, it was really clear to hear how much I hate you.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Do we get reviews on the quality of our podcast?
I've heard people tell me.
Oh,
yeah. I think we've gotten some. I don't know. We've had some friends who do podcasts who tell us, like, wow, you guys get good quality. And we can really still thank Dane Allen for that.
That's true. He originally set up all the filters and the...
Yeah. He set up... He taught me. I do go in and do... let's take it back. We do use another program called Zencaster mm-hmm. whenever we're doing remote.
Which is Buddhist. So, should we?
It's... I don't think it's Buddhist. But
Zen
it's,
is a very... The Buddhist term, John.
I don't know. I mean,
huh?
And then we use
it's just
Johnny. Yeah, but that's pretty much it's very listen, Johnny, our the quality is about the content.
It is. It's not about the bells and the whistles.
Right.
We've got a pair of $10 headphones on.
No, I think these are pretty expensive headphones I'm wearing.
Oh. And well, then we have I've got a pair of $10 headphones on. You have Beats by Dre.
We have a fairly just, I don't know, it's probably middle road interface. And mm-hmm. you have an interface at your house if we have to do it remote. So we figured it out.
We do.
And we compress it, and then we compress it again. I compress it in two separate programs.
Oh, you double compress.
And I've learned, Dane taught me all the, like, compressor. I've looked for what levels, because sometimes you might speak louder into the mic. So we do some editing, but it's all like someone taught me. It's like I'm the guy on the island in Lost. Someone just taught me how to push the button. Was it a button?
I never watched Lost.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't.
You never watched Lost?
Once I heard, first of all, people got into it and they were way too into it. And I was literally lost because I was like, I'm way behind. And then once it ended and people were so upset at the ending, I was like, well, I'm not going to watch this now. No one's going to be upset at this ending.
You should go watch Lost.
Man.
I think that, we could have like absolutely fascinating conversations.
We could do another whole podcast about
a show that was 10, 15 years ago. Or whatever.
People would probably listen to that, though. That's the thing. Niche is everything in podcasting.
Law, is it niche?
It's niche.
Yeah. Lost.
Niche.
Niche. I hear him say niche.
Nietzsche? That's a philosopher.
It's a niche. If you go, listen, it's still, I will say this.
Uh-huh.
You may not be disappointed with the ending. Only I was.
No, a lot of people were.
We're different people, no. Johnny.
Everybody that I've talked to was disappointed with
No, talk to the Gomez's. They loved it.
Really?
And they think that the rest of us don't understand what happened, and we think they don't understand what happened, and I think no one understands what happened, which is why I don't like it.
Well, they put too many loose ends, and you have to tie it all together, and then they were like, how are we going to tie this
together? What are we going to do with all this? Yeah, it was a great, again, it's a, that classic, awesome premise that you're not sure where you're going to take it. You got to know where you're going to take it, Johnny. Or you got to keep being creative along the way. It's a super great show. I would go back and watch it. Maybe you should watch it at the same time that I watch it, because I won't remember.
We could do a watch along.
It was like 9 seasons, and then you know we could discuss episodes.
This sounds like the worst episode podcast ever.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. That's the thing too. Like, we're watching so much stuff, and I wonder if it's just making us all boring. John, we should be out there living, but we're not allowed, you know. We're not allowed to go live right now.
Did you watch Space Force, by the way?
I watched like 4 episodes.
You didn't even finish it.
It wasn't very good.
It got better.
Maybe. All right, I'll finish.
I'm on episode 10. No, I finished it. I finished it season 1 last
year. You don't even know that you've watched it.
Well,
that's how big of an impact
it made. 6 or 8 episodes. End up having 10. I didn't look at the big picture. So Steve Carell's in like tons of stuff. He's in 2 Apple shows and in a movie and on that Netflix.
I saw the movie.
Was it good?
Uh-huh. It's really good.
What's it called?
Irresistible.
Okay, I need to go watch that.
It's really good. And John Stewart directed. And it's about a political advisor.
You know what? Yeah, I saw the previews.
And I kind of expect, this will be really kind of progressive mindset, anti-whatever. But it was more even-handed than you would think.
Do you remember the
ending.
Remember the old show with Michael, the old movie with Michael Keaton called Speechless?
It's more like that than I immediately thought of that when I was watching. I was like, this is like that. Speechless was great. And that was based
Gina
on...
Gina Davis? Was that who those?
Gina Davis, Michael Keaton. And it's kind of loosely based on the romance between James Carville and what was her name? I can't remember. There was another advisor to another campaign.
Yeah.
And they fell in love.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of loosely based on that. What would if 2 speechwriters for rival ended up having a romance and then they...
I actually think plot lines like that are very helpful in the modern discourse because
if James Carville can do it, if he can get along...
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's like at the end of Rocky IV. If I can change and you can change,
yo, Adrian.
No,
wait. Yeah, I think it's a. It really is so polarizing. We talk about the boogeyman a little bit. The boogeyman on both sides, especially the boogeyman. Like I'm telling you, man.
For some of us, it's an actual boogeyman because I take melatonin at night, and it makes me have really vivid nightmares. Do you? You ever get nightmares from that?
I don't.
But go back to your boogeyman argument.
Not from melatonin. I just think when you're terrified, when like the worst insult you can throw at someone is another political party or another ideological side of the aisle.
Yeah.
Like, my gosh, you know. We talked about this last week. You know, some of us in the Christian world who are listening to historians and theologians talk about issues of systemic race, things I honestly didn't know were up for debate because I was a history guy. Like, well, yeah, of course I know these things happen. I'm learning more. But, like, there is this fear-mongering kind of insult that's being hurled that you're a Marxist or a cultural Marxist or a socialist. And I'm just like, I do believe that there are far-left radicals who want to be Marxist or socialist, and I don't agree with them. But, like, the idea that you just stumble into Marxism,
right?
Like you don't know it, but you're a number one. It's super insulting to someone who's got a degree in history and political science,
right? And you might have nuanced views that have layers to them. And they're like, nope, you want redistribution of wealth at all costs by the state,
right? because you acknowledge something systemic in the problem or in politics or in
In the same way that people do it on the other side, they say if you support Trump, then it's fascism, and
you're a racist.
You immediately compare him to Hitler.
Yeah.
When you don't agree with somebody, you compare him to Hitler.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not helping anything.
No. And like the whole, I don't think by definition you can stumble accidentally into Marxism, because Marxism, number one, is atheistic. I mean, it's one of the hallmarks. I mean, I've studied these things because I had to go to school, but you're like, I would have to denounce Christ, I would have to denounce democracy. I would have to denounce capitalism. Like, you would very, like, intentionally
right.
have to make a turn. I'm not saying that, you know, there's not some merit to looking at where those things took communist China or communist Soviet Union countries, which were not coming out of democracies at all, but were coming out of imperialistic regimes for the most part that were dynasties over time, where you had – it's just like there's so many variables of comparing the two to just say to a conservative Christian,
right.
hey, because you're saying that you believe there may be some things within the system of our politics, within the system even of our churches right. – that may have some leftover bias that we need to address, suddenly you're right. a Marxist. I mean, it's like, again, it's a boogeyman thing.
Yeah. Or even if you just want universal health care because you see it works in Canada and you're like, well, could we maybe look at this? And they're like, oh my gosh. Like, that's a yeah. huge, like, yeah. no, if you get cancer, you should die penniless. Like, I think we can find some middle ground here.
Yeah.
You should have just had $100,000 in the bank. And then when you get the cancer diagnosis, you go draw it out and you pay for your treatment. It's that simple. Like, I don't like that there's no nuance to any of these arguments. It's like either you're yeah. a completely dyed-in-the-wool progressive who wants redistribution of wealth and a godless society, or you're a real American who wants to pull everything up by your bootstraps. And it's like, all right, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Some people don't have bootstraps.
Yeah. And again, to even the conservative defense as well, like every conservative trying to work this out is not a racist either.
Right.
They try to find their way to, hey, it, you know, the Black Lives Matter organization scares them. They don't align politically.
Right.
I don't align politically and ideologically with everything within the organization. And so understanding that there may be confusion between the fact that that is a major expression being used and mm-hmm. trying to separate, again, the great word is nuance. There has to be nuance. Somebody on Twitter yesterday, which again, Twitter takes me through all kinds of emotional things. It's hard to be on there right now. But, you know, someone said, look, just, you know, logically, the need to shut down ideas on any side, to shut down dialogue, can't be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I read or heard one scholar who's literally a PhD theologian from Southern Baptist Seminary, who's a Black author. And he said, you know, hey, guys, I just want y'all to know, in scholarly academic worlds, 90% of what I read is by people I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do in academia.
Yeah.
You
read dissenting opinion. Yeah.
And it helps us learn what are, instead of them being enemies.
Yeah.
Like, this is just what it's like to have discourse and thought, you know?
Or sometimes they fall in love, because I just found this. James okay. Carville, mm-hmm. who was a famous Democratic yep, advisor yep. and consultant.
Which campaign?
Dukakis and then Clinton. But gotcha. Clinton, most famous for Clinton.
Okay.
Carville is married to Republican political consultant Mary Matlin. I wanted to say Marley Matlin. I was like, no, that's the deaf actress. But I knew it was close. It's Mary Matlin. Who worked for George H.W. Bush on his 92 presidential reelection campaign. So they were married in New Orleans in 93. So this is right on the heels of Bush losing in 92 to Clinton.
Wow.
And they got married the next year.
Wow.
So it really was speechless. It was yeah. that's, I mean, 100% what that movie was based on, pretty much. I mean, obviously they took license, but
yeah,
that it could happen where you could have a rival that you're also in love with. And you're like, are you going to like kibosh their campaign?
Arnold Schwarzenegger is a staunch Republican.
Right. One of the Kennedys.
Yeah. Who is.
Or was.
Yeah.
Now they're divorced.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So it, politically, then this love.
That's story, right. It doesn't go on forever, John.
I was trying to make another. I just think, like, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I think, again, guys, I'm sorry. I'm not a Marxist. Like. And it's super.
That's exactly what a Marxist would say.
Well, no, it's not. Like a Marxist would say, I understand these ideas, and like you can't stumble. You can stumble into liberal ideas, I suppose, not realizing. But there's a difference between that and suddenly, I will say this about it. I've seen like tons of videos where this is the term, specifically with the term white privilege. Someone says, well, of course white privilege exists. You know, privilege exists in all kinds. They all agree. Uh-huh. Of course there's something that exists that's an unconscious bias, or you have something in your life. And then in 30 seconds, the turn is made to this. But it's racist to hold an entire race of people responsible for racism. That is racist, to which I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I've not heard anybody, Christian, non-Christian, anyone who's like seriously in academia, use the term white privilege to try to hold all white people responsible for this.
Right.
That's just that's a big leap. But that's the leap. And then within another 30 seconds, I've heard this on multiple things, they're talking about Marxist Russia and genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're talking about what happened in the Soviet Union and how you go, in within 2 minutes, you took an idea that I don't even agree with and you weaponized it to say it means one thing. I mean, I'm sure there are people on the far left who may want to hold all people responsible. I'm not hearing out of the black Christian community or black academic Christian community, I'm not hearing that.
Right, vengeance and revenge.
Yeah,
and
I'm hearing a, hey, and again, this is the whole definition of justice and injustice too. Like, we're not talking about, no one I'm listening to or reading historically is talking about granting something to someone that they don't deserve.
Yeah.
The definition of injustice is that someone does deserve something. All people deserve this. And someone is not, they're being denied something they do deserve. We're not talking about adding something to them they don't. We're talking about removing a hindrance to something that's causing them to not experience what all Americans should experience, and being okay to say, hey, that's bringing up to equality, which is, it's an equality versus like an equity, which is an equal outcome. I don't think we can cause equal outcomes. We can cause equal opportunity in where we see those things. Again, for example, so show me that. And I told you this at lunch. I heard a guy say he graduated from UNC Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
And just one example, they have a legacy program for scholarships. It's like a game changer for families that if your dad, your granddad, your great granddad went to that university, then you get like this extremely beneficial package of scholarships and other things if you qualify for it.
Right.
Well, he said, my grandfather may have gone to this school, but the school didn't allow black students to even be admitted till the late 50s. And so there is no such thing in that program as a black student's grandfather being allowed to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, so there is a benefit, an advantage being given simply because of the color of one's skin but he said no one's standing at the gates of the school with an M16 trying to shoot black people. That's, if you think that's what racism only is, then you're missing. This is what I mean by systemic. There's no one in that administration probably meaning harm by that, but there may be something left over.
There's a remnant of that.
If you think it over logically, like, hey, that does benefit the grandson of a white guy, in a way it does not benefit the grandson of a black guy if both of them are equally qualified, whether scores or other things, to be admitted to that school. And so, like, you just go, I'm not offended by that. I can look at that logically. There's no emotion in that for me to say, okay, but that doesn't mean that we're trying to grant something that wasn't deserved. Like, what we're trying to say is let's make this where if something equally deserved is not being given, that it's taken away. And so, like, I don't think you can back into Marxism, is where I started with this. You can, though, by fear, back into a lot of other things where you're not paying attention. If fear, and as a believer,
yeah,
we absolutely know. I mean, I'm a fearful guy. Like, it's one of the things I'm in recovery
for. It's
easy
to drive the electorate through fear. It's been happened many elections.
Oh, yeah.
So it's easier to back into fascism than would it be to back into a progressive extreme ideology.
Right.
It's easier to be like hoodwinked into, wait a minute, now we're in a weird cult that we didn't know. Like, we were talking at lunch, yeah, and I was comparing it to, like, you go to a church, you're like, well, this church is interesting. Man, they're like a family here.
Yeah.
Man, they dress all the same. That's interesting. Well, that one rule's kind of weird, but I guess I can go along. And then you look up later and you're like, I'm in a cult. Like,
right.
That's easier to fall into.
Yeah.
To me, having like a leader at the top that's unquestionable, et cetera, that fascism is that thing that, like, I mean, right, it happened in Nazi Germany. They didn't think that, like, oh, this is where we're headed. Everybody just thought, what an enigmatic leader.
Right. Well, let's not forget that he was the man of the year on the cover of Time magazine. Hitler, yeah, was at one point. We're not comparing, by the way, all conservatives to Hitler. I know we just said we don't do that. I'm saying, like, what we understand, and I'm speaking to this as a conservative, if you know, you and I were talking last week after the podcast, like, it, does it feel like we pick on the conservative side more?
Yeah.
The reason is we are conservatives.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was the quote, too, that I read last week. It said, I love America so much, which is why I insist on criticizing her. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, that's part of being an American, is critique. That's one of the things that, if you want to say what made America great, the ability to have dissent,
yeah,
and not go to jail for it,
yeah,
is part of what makes America great. And so the people who just go, shut up, just do what they say, or you don't, or you're not a real patriot. The realest patriot is probably the most critical.
Well, hello, the original patriots. Okay, the original ones, where those terms come from.
Yeah,
they're. Constitutional conventions lasted for months and months and months of heavy debate over states' rights versus federal, over these anti-federalist papers and stuff. And federalist papers, they were brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, brutal attacks upon one another. And these guys governed together. They didn't all have these perfect relationships, but to understand that tension is a part of what is necessary, because the government is not the kingdom of God. It's just not. And so you can't expect it to have some sort of deified righteousness that can't be questioned.
Yeah.
Like, if it is designed, literally checks and balances, balance of powers, the Bill of Rights, all of these things are designed to keep a questioning process in place, because those guys knew where not questioning led to. They'd come out of monarchy. They'd come out of an abuse of power, and they were terrified of centralizing that power. And so that's why at all turns, they constantly invited that sort of dialogue. Now, I will say, Washington, at his farewell address, he did warn about two things. Even there, he wasn't like, hey, America's great. Like, America's great, and let me warn you about what will not make America great anymore. It's actually two things he warned about we studied all throughout history.
Well, number one, alien invasion. No.
Rule no. Number one was what he called entangling alliances.
Okay.
And he meant, let's not get involved in all of the world, the global affairs. Let's not be involved in every European war, or
yeah,
because at that point, you know, again,
which
France,
we've had mixed results with,
yeah,
our entangled alliances since then.
Yeah, well, again, that again, isolationism has its own negativity.
Right, that's true.
You allow
atrocities to go on.
Nazism was an obvious enemy that the whole world knew eventually. But
yeah,
but let's be honest, we were so still gun shy from World War One, and rightly so. That's why the U.S. I mean. Germany was already taking, they've been 37, 38, they're invading in mm-hmm. this appeasement policy. And once Britain was involved, if you see that whole, it wasn't like, you know, Franklin Roosevelt was able just to get everybody on board. There was a huge anti-war sentiment. And even though Churchill was begging and we were supplying, you know, it took a few things happening for, and just like World War One did too, by the way, the sinking of the Lusitania and the killing of American soldiers by German U-boats. And so, you know, you have this like, this need in both cases, Pearl Harbor, Lusitania, you had these reasons for the United right. States to kind
like
of break
a fuse
that.
Was lit. Yeah. Yeah.
But then the second thing he warned against was parties, political parties. Mm. He warned specifically against like a two-party political system, that would really, because he saw it happening mm-hmm. already with Federalists and Anti-Federalists. And then, you know, obviously Republicans didn't come along until, you know, early 19th century. And they're kind of not what you would think of as today. They'd be the opposite of the Republican Party you think of today. But it's just it's an interesting idea that he was already warning. There wasn't such a sense of exceptionalism, except that we have fought for something we believe in. And guys, yeah. obviously we know that it was not a freedom that was granted to all men, and certainly not to women either. So there were people who were disenfranchised from those original thoughts of liberty. And by the way, just so everyone knows, if you read historically, they were aware. There was an awareness that it was perhaps tragic irony, so much talk of liberty for all and for all men. There was so many, that's why it's called the Three-Fifths Compromise, because there was a lot of debate. It required a compromise to tax it's like this. I read this in one of the books. The North didn't want to count to allow the slaves in the South to be counted in the population numbers because it would grant more representation to Southern states and they would have more power. And so there was like one argument to grant slaves status so that you could count them in the census and you'd have that many more in the House of Representatives, which would tip the political balance of power to the South over the North. The South didn't want to count slaves as full people because then their taxation would change.
Yeah.
And so now we're going to owe more taxes on more people. And so the three-fifths compromise helped both of them. So it wasn't like that it was just the North always wanted slaves to be free. It was a, we're not sure we want you to count them. And they came to this horrible compromise of humanity that basically devalued black lives to say they're three-fifths because this way we both get what we want. You know, you don't get extra representation and we don't get extra taxes and everybody, you know, gets what they want. But that's all a part of the debate about what liberty really meant for all people. And for the most part, it meant white land-owning males. And it had throughout even Europe, you know, it was based on, they were just kind of continuing that. But there were people who were saying early on, this doesn't make sense.
Right, it's not sustainable.
Especially chattel-based slavery, which is not European-based slavery. Certainly not Roman slavery, which is usually based upon conquering. It wasn't based upon race and in the same way. Mm-hmm. Racism existed, but it wasn't, slavery wasn't always based upon that. That you own a person who cannot, you know, fend for themselves. That even, there's a lot of that came into this, it's paternal, like this really twisted paternal relationship that the South thought they had with their black slaves, mm-hmm. and that they can't, that's when they dehumanized them and now they consider them less intelligent, you know, not able. There was a lot of that. You had to convince yourself medically, psychologically, scholastically that they could not achieve what white people could achieve. So they need us. This benevolent, paternal thing. They need
the white masters. Right, they wouldn't know what to do off the plantation.
Right.
Yeah.
And they even, when slaves occasionally did gain their freedom, there was movements from North and South to ship them back to Africa because they thought they could not survive in our white society here. But it was considered like a grace, like mercy, to ship them back to Africa. And also, by the way, considered a missionary endeavor to now have them, they've been exposed to Christianity, and to send them back into savage lands to spread the gospel. Like, it's such a weird mix of what it was. But whatever it was, we're not going to deal with it. We can never, as a nation, before the Civil War, fully all accept that there could be full equality. And I just think it goes back to that idea. If you don't think there's not a lot still in our, I mean, that is a part of the founding of the nation. And I can love the nation and say, hey, that's there.
That's a stain on the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's okay for us to continue to acknowledge that, especially when somebody's, that's their history. We have a close friend, you know, who posted about his history the other day. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
It goes all the way back, maternal and paternal. And he was like, this is not hate or something. I'm just telling you, my great-great-grandfather was born on a plantation, and this was his name, and this is, you know, when, you know, his son also born into slavery, and you just go...
Yeah, it's context, and the need for our country to be perfect is weird in and of itself, and I'm not sure exactly where that even came from.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't expect that of anything else. Like, you wouldn't expect your family to be perfect.
Right.
I mean, you grow up with this belief that, like, Mom and Dad have my best interests. And then you grow up and you start realizing they're people, they have flaws, they're selfish sometimes.
Yeah.
And then you just come to an acceptance, and then hopefully you move on to a healthy relationship with that parent. Sometimes it's not possible, but hopefully that doesn't mean you hate your family.
Right.
It just means you have context, you know.
Well, I think as a marriage counselor, and even with Sadie, we talk about this, you know, Sadie... We're married 20 years this year, and she'll hear us argue.
Mm-hmm.
And it really will bother her sometimes. We've never tried to hide arguing from her. But we don't argue a lot. We just don't, you know. But when we do, sometimes they're significant. And kids will be like, well, I hate this argument.
Right.
And we take
Does
that
this
moment.
Mean things are broken?
Right. We take that moment and say, this is what it's like to really be married.
Yeah.
And we never go to bed mad.
And you're going to help us clean up this glass.
Right.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah, go get the broom.
Get the big dustpan. Yeah.
But like this idea that if you don't, here's what's happened. I've seen too many marriages. if you don't make healthy tension and conflict resolution intentionally a part of your relationship, you're asking for when it finally boils over.
Right, and it always does.
You end up destroying the very thing you thought you were preserving with all of this fake peace.
Yeah, right. It is. It's a fake peace. And it's that's the whole thing about being peaceful versus like a peacemaker. Like this idea that just go along and get along is the American way. It's like everything in our history says that's not even close.
No.
Even we talked about that in the way that we think about Martin Luther King and, well, it was all peaceful. And eventually his peaceful way of thinking just, they gave in. It's like oppressors don't give up.
No.
Because of like there was a put up or shut up in those protests. There was violence in those protests. There was there were things that got out of control. And so it's like, but that's all kind of been washed away. And we're just like they just organized a bunch of sit-ins. And then the white people finally were like, okay, you win. That's not how it happened at all.
Not at all. In fact, they were peaceful, but they were also intentionally read this.
Disruptive.
They're disruptive, right. They were meant to disrupt the status quo. So peaceful, yes, but not meant to be out of your way. They were meant to cause trouble.
Yeah.
So that you would have to look at the issue. And let's not forget, most of the major civil rights legislation that passed didn't pass until he himself had to be assassinated.
Yep.
You know, like and like then riots erupted. I'm not pro riot. I'm just saying, you know, if it was me, and I think if we could just ask that question, we talked about that at lunch too. If I could just ask the question, and I've sat with a few friends, a few black friends, and I'm trying to sit with more. And I know one black person's experience or one white person's experience does not speak for the entire ethnicity of those people. You don't speak for everybody. And I'm not insinuating that. And I do think that anecdote, because you'll go find somebody who disagrees of both colors, like you will.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying we just take one person. I'm just saying when you see mounting evidence of, okay, here it is academically, here it is historically, here it is theologically, and now I'm speaking with friends whom I trust, whom I've known for years, and I've never asked these questions before, and I'm finding out that so far everyone I've talked to has had a different American experience than me.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they didn't rise above. Doesn't mean they even feel necessarily like that they haven't had opportunity. Just that, like Reggie told us on the call, just that I've never going to teach my kid about making sure if you get pulled over, you do these things because there's a different level of anxiety. And I've never in my life, and I've had talked to a friend recently, had cops use racial slurs at me, and he has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has, and he has no reason to lie to me. We're fellow believers. He's never said it before. He's not trying to go online and make a big stink about it. Like, he's just saying, look, since you asked, let me tell you the 8 times this happened to me, and it was a lot of different things. And I'm not ready to share all of that, but I'm like trying to listen, and I go, look, if I care about my friend, it shouldn't be so offensive. There should be no offense here to say, wow, this is uncomfortable. But why can't I listen to my friend? And if I don't have a friend, you know, maybe what does that say? It may not say anything, but maybe I'm not hearing real people. And maybe there's something here, like empathy is a huge component of the gospel, because empathy was like the impetus of the incarnation. It was Jesus could just divinely cause himself to know everything that you and I know, which he does because he's omniscient. He could cause him, but he never chose divine empathy. He never chose to divinely bypass the process of feeling what we feel.
Mm-hmm.
He could have. He's God. He could be like, oh, I now magically snap my fingers and I feel everything Johnny feels. Instead, he never chose that path, though he could have. He chose the path of true empathy, which is, I'm going to come walk next to you. I'm going to come feel what you feel. I'm going to know what it's like to sneeze and to be sleepy. I'm going to know what it's like to have a cold, to be rejected. I'm going to know what it's like to feel lust. I'm going to feel all these things with you. Because especially the book of John, it's all considered to be the love of God. God so loved the world that the Word of God became flesh and dwelled among us, and we beheld His glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. Like, Him dwelling among people was the grandest expression of grace and truth. Like, even God Himself would not proclaim certain truths until He had experienced those truths for Himself next to the people that He was speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
He just wouldn't. I think that He could have, but He didn't. And like, if we're going to follow in those footsteps to say there's a humility, and I'm sorry, if Jesus was humble, and if that messes with our theology, then we're not reading the Bible. Hebrews is explicit about it, that He humbled Himself and became obedient to God's will for His own life. Even taking, the Bible says, the position of a slave is what some translations say. He became a bondservant. He became a servant. The reason Peter was so ticked off at Jesus whenever he washed everybody's feet is they still believed that greatness and power was the expression of godliness or of what man should seek in life. And Jesus kept turning it all on its end and said, no, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here on my knees and I'm going to wash your feet. And I'm going to do this though I'm the master. I'm going to do this though I'm the greatest one. And so those of us who are not the master and the greatest one, how much more should we not be willing to humble ourselves and say, man, can I not just sit at somebody's feet for a minute and not have to counterbalance all of their viewpoints with my own opinions and just like really kind of try to hear what's happening here without my entire world being rocked? Because in my opinion, it's the essence of the gospel to do so. They may say things I disagree with. They're not forcing me to agree with something. I still have a brain and a heart and a community and a Bible. I get to keep learning and listening. If I'm so at a place of insecurity, I can't even endure the conversation, then I think that's when we back into fear mongering and into ignorance. We back into something we don't realize we're doing because we're not taking in ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. You extrapolate like, well, if they believe this and if I give them this, then it's going to keep going down the line until I've given away my linchpin beliefs. It's like, just walk with somebody, just grieve with somebody who's grieving and then see where it gets you.
Yeah.
We're so afraid of it though. Yeah, and I think empathy is hard, and I'm not sure it can. I'm not even sure it can be taught. Like, that's the thing. That's the hard part. Is I think some people just don't seem to be wired. That we talked about that before in like bully culture.
Yeah,
like we're learning now. Like we used to always be told, well, bullies are people who just have insecurity, and you know they've bad feelings about themselves. And that's why they project it on other people. And now we're learning. The more we learn about children, the way they interact with other children, and it even goes into adulthood, that we're just learning like some people just lack empathy and they feel pretty good about themselves.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, bullies.
And now they have empathy. And now they have social media accounts.
Well, and that desensitizes us culturally way more because I'm not looking at someone's face when I do.
Right.
Hey, the good thing about empathy is
I think it does. It leads you to, you can become a bully. Even if you weren't one with social media. I mean, I think I've been guilty of it before where I'm like, well, I've got the best words. I know how to take this person down a peg and I probably should have just not hit send.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and somebody, we were talking about a post they were thinking about making in the middle of it. And we had a conversation and I said, hey, tell me why do you want to post it?
Mm-hmm.
Cause we all are feeling, and he goes, you know, I'm not sure I really asked. Well, let's think about why. And he said, cause I was frustrated. I said, well, man, maybe it's still the right thing to post, but I'm going to tell you something. In my life, I have learned when I post frustrated. Now, look, posting frustrated over justice, if I'm doing that, I've tried to post what is compassionate, what is true. If I can see something that is undeniably true, and I try to post also the opinions of those who are ahead of me in this and who are greater experts than me. So I'm doing my best because there's times I've almost written things that, like you said, would just blow this up because I'm mad.
Yeah.
I just want to go, oh, I want to blow it up. And everybody's blowing it up. And
everybody feels like what they're posting is true, probably.
Yeah.
You don't go, well, this is a big lie, but let's get it out there.
No, I know. And true is a dangerous word here.
Yeah.
I think I mean like, here's what I know.
Verifiable.
George Floyd's neck and airway apparently was crushed by my visual, no matter, I'm telling you, when I'm watching
and by
here,
two autopsy reports,
right,
too.
I'm looking here going, regardless of whatever else comes out of this thing politically, that was a tipping point of experience for me. I experienced that video.
Yeah.
I didn't take someone else's commentary. I experienced it. It moved me to both tears and action. that's true for me. Like going, I can't unsee, and I can't unfeel that. And I think that anybody, I've not met one person that thought it was the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even those who are like absolutely against the cause, you know, they're like, yeah, that shouldn't have happened. But no one is saying that that was the right thing to happen. So I know we talk about a lot, like the testimony of your enemies. If you're with an opponent and you both agree to a certain point, then you know it's true. Because if no one, again, if we what's the example that we've used before? Like if I'm arguing with you and we completely disagree ideologically on mm-hmm. something, but you say, you know, you quote me as yeah. my enemy, then there's no doubt the quote, if I agree with it, is true. Because both of us are now agreeing on separate sides of at least evidence in the middle.
Yeah.
And there's something really strong about that. So everybody's agreeing that that should not have happened. Now, whether or not it happened from one bad cop, or there's systemic issues in policing, or whether or not it just, you know, like whether or not because if he had drugs in the system that, you know, gave the police, like there's so many debates that we're all going to, but we can all say this one cop went too far. And in that moment, okay, there's a common ground I can post about to say, hey, this moves me and this is important and we should listen. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a truth. I'm not going to, you know, and it's not that we don't post things that aren't controversial. Controversial may be the right thing to post. I'm caught in that right now. Like I sent you something this week that was great. And you said, retweet it, coward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because we text each other things. I think everybody has a friend now that they text things that they're afraid to retweet or they're afraid to share, be it because it's a little bit, maybe it has a curse word in it, or maybe it's, I agree with this, but I don't want to share this part of it. But then this was something that we're like, yeah, we're pretty much both on board with this, but this is like one of those things where I was like, share it then if you believe it so much, John. I was just like busting your chops though.
Well, no, but I said to you, I do feel like a coward.
Yeah. And
the deal is I don't believe social. I think I said this 100 times. I'm saying it again. Social media is a great place for good messaging. It's not a place for good conversations.
Yeah.
I believe books and podcasts and possibly sermons. They're longer form, and it gives us a chance to...
Your sermons are super long form.
Super long form. It gives us a chance to, like, give context, hear inflection, all those things. So I took that, put it into my notes, in my OneNote, mm-hmm. and I'm using that for some book things and other things. Like, I'm not sure... And the other hard part is you might go back... That person might have said something that was very, very true and right,
mm-hmm.
and you might go back 2 tweets... from there, and they said something that was horrible.
Right.
And now
which
suddenly...
Which happens all the time.
Happens all the time.
Where you look like you've endorsed a person now.
Right.
By sharing their tweet.
By sharing an idea that was right.
Yeah.
You know, something we say in our house a lot, I think Andrew taught me this, is that all truth is God's truth.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, hey, look, if a prostitute walks into our church on a Sunday morning and holds up John 3:16 and starts preaching the gospel, most of us won't listen to her, but it doesn't mean the gospel wasn't true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like what she's saying is true. And so there, I'm not saying that her situation may be, that was probably a bad example, because I think also a lot of what we see in prostitution is something not like people are just jumping into because they want to.
Right.
But there's a lot going on there. So excuse my insensitivity to that. But I mean, like if someone comes in who you know is not where they should be, let's use a better example. How many preachers out there that were, you know, put up on a pedestal, and when they fell, it's so easy to stop believing everything they ever said.
Yeah.
But in the end of the day, it doesn't mean what they said wasn't right. You know?
Yeah.
It just means, and it does though. I'm that guy. There have been songwriters, man.
It's hard.
So, really hard with songwriters when they go off. And there's some great Christian songs. I know there's a band I won't mention now that I love, you know, one of their records had just some amazing, and he just proclaimed atheist now. He's denied all of his faith. And you mm-hmm. go, can I listen to this music anymore? And like, I can't. I've had trouble listening to that music now that still is familiar and comforting to me, because it feels like to me those lyrics didn't hold for that guy. And truth is, he may not even have written the lyrics. You know what I'm saying? We don't know he was an artist. And so I think we also grant so much ethical capital to artists as well.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, but that's another podcast.
Ethical capital.
Wow.
.com.
That's our new
domain name.
Band name.
Sheesh.
Hey, I was looking through this week and wanted to give a shout out to our patrons. We did get an email. We mentioned possibly doing another Zoom call, and we had one of our patrons reach out and say that they would be interested.
Thanks for patronizing us, yeah. You guys.
You can go to our Patreon page. You can find it at talkaboutthatpodcast.com. And
you sent them gifts. I think you should send them some of these pork rinds.
I do have pork.
They're still in a chair at the foot of your desk.
I will tell all of you patrons that your gifts are coming via media mail. And that could take a little longer. So
somebody's a cheapskate.
Yeah, if you're one of the low talkers, we say thanks. That's the $5 a month. But is it the walkie talkie? That's the $20 a month where you get the book and the DVD.
You had to come up with little kitschy names.
Have you ever read all the names?
I don't. You read them one time on the air.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh. Are you
it was
sure?
Fantastic.
Oh.
But
you don't think that it's helped?
No.
That people...
No, I think people support... we do appreciate the support, and your pork rinds are gingerly on their way.
Gingerly on their way. I'm trying to see what the tiers are here.
The low talker.
Yeah, you got the low talker. I thought that the things I wrote with it are pretty funny, but hey, no, it's fine. You just write your descriptions, you know. The walkie-talkie, that's 20. You are the feet beneath our wings. Wait. I don't know where that came from. Oh, walkie-talkie, yeah.
Oh.
The pep talker, $50 a month. We will literally build a human pyramid in your honor. Well,
that's
not literally. You get two John Driver books, one Johnny W CD and one Johnny W DVD if you're a pep talker. And then you got the big, the big talker, $100 a month, which is we hear you, the whole world hears you.
I've got some old out of print comedy CDs that I have in my garage. I need to send those to some people.
Okay.
Because that's not even a thing anymore.
Wow.
That's from like early on.
Wow.
Some jokes I don't even do anymore. So, that, I don't even know what that.
How offensive are they?
Oh my gosh, I got edgy. Oh,
Johnny was so blue back then, guys.
I was. And that was before I got saved.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of my testimony. And now it's preserved on CD form.
I got to get Sadie doing your jokes and send them to you. She does. She'll just drop Johnny W. punchlines now at random.
Okay.
At dinner and stuff. You know?
I like it.
Yeah.
I need it because I miss the, it's been over 4 months now.
Wow.
Since I've been performing regularly.
I'm sorry.
And we'll see. Hopefully the end is, I don't want to say the end is near because that sounds dark.
Yeah. Sounds...
The end is near, my friends. I got a sandwich board on. Walking the streets.
I had to do one of your jokes at a family reunion because my father.
You had to, John?
My father-in-law was like, yeah, Johnny has a joke about conjoined twins. And I was like, okay. He was like, it goes. And he looked at me.
Oh, and he was going to butcher it.
So I did it.
Oh, boy.
I mean, I didn't try to do it like it was a bit. I just said the words in the way that I know that you say them. I think how you say them. So my father was a conjoined twin. We used to refer to his brother as my uncle on my father's side. Did I get it word for word?
Did you say my dad? Did you say my dad?
I said father.
You said father both times.
We used to refer. Oh, you said my dad, then father.
Then father, because otherwise
you're
tipping the bit a little bit. It's just a little bit of a twist.
Maybe. I don't remember. I may have said dad.
So my dad was a conjoined twin.
There you go. We used to refer to
his brother as my uncle on
my
father's
side. Because you said, yeah, okay. And then I did that.
They were surgically separated, so now he's my uncle once removed.
Thanks, good night.
And, boom. Then you get out on the hunt.
And I picked up a piece of cake in that tent, and I just walked off. It was
really?
Like, see, I got in the car and drove back to Tennessee.
That's what you do every time.
make sure that you check out Johnny on social media. Instagram is a great...
Oh, TikTok now too, John.
Oh, TikTok. You don't stop. Sorry, I'm going 90s.
That's fine. A little Color Me Bad with two Ds.
Oh, my goodness.
Color Me Bad. What a mess.
Yeah.
Just guys, just white dudes wearing suits that were three sizes too big.
Yeah. They invented a lot of things. Like,
did they?
Well, can I say this? The I Want to Sex You Up was not a...
Was that a thing?
Like, that wasn't a thing before then. It still is. It didn't stick. But everybody's saying...
No, now it's... That's.
Do they
that's
say that? I still don't hear that in common culture vernacular.
I hear it in my house. No.
Oh, Johnny's happily married, everybody.
I am very happily married.
It's fine. It's fine.
But we can say whatever we want. We don't have kids.
That's true.
I can be like, hey, girl.
You can say whatever you want.
Yep.
My goodness.
I don't, though. Generally speaking, you got a temperance.
Someone on our staff said the other day, we were talking about how language changes and trying to make sure you say the right thing and how frustrating that can be. And she said, and I thought it was so good. I'll give her credit. It was Allison. Allison said, you know what we decided in our house? Really measuring and paying attention to our words, even when no one's around, is a really good thing.
Yeah.
that just helps us. That's a good thing as a disciple to do.
Yeah.
To just make sure I'm always paying attention to my words is a good thing. I was like, huh, that was really good, Allison. Way to go, Allison. Thank you. That stuck with me. So, Allison, you should consider Patreon. You know, with this big shout out, so I can't wait till she listens to this. It'll be great. So I can't wait for you to listen as well, listener, because this is Monday and we are excited to offer you this episode. What is it, Johnny?
152.
I think it's episode, hold on, I'm pulling it up. Episode 119.
119.
Yeah, 119. So hey, we're, you know, getting up there to 120, bro, and you know what happens at 120.
I know.
I don't either.
No one knows.
Nothing at all. I'm just going to go in perpetuity here and see what happens. So. But I appreciate you listening always. It really does mean a lot. Send us your comments, your questions, anything you want us to talk about, and we'll be happy to try to discuss it on the air. We'll just see you next week on
Talk About That.
Do you ever hear sayings make their way through the culture and the church that seem nice in theory, but are actually theologically problematic? My name is Shara Donahue, and I'm the host of The Bible Never Said That, a podcast where we examine these popular sayings under the lens of biblical truth. We cover sayings like, God won't give you more than you can handle, time heals all wounds, and follow your heart. We also spend time exploring how people use Bible verses out of context. If you want to grow in discernment and truth, join us and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.